I'm joined by Seema Malhotra, the Labour MP for Feltham and Heston. Thank you for joining us.
You're welcome. Great to join you.
First and foremost, just to come off the back of yesterday's budget, how do you feel about the provisions, or lack of provisions, I should say, for aviation in yesterday's budget?
It was deeply disappointing for the whole West London community, I think, that there was no mention of aviation in the budget. And it is something I mentioned in my speech in Parliament as well. The reason being that there are thousands of jobs and livelihoods, families of all ages in West London, businesses dependent on Heathrow. And that isn't just the airport, the airlines, but so many businesses, small businesses in the supply chain, whether they're ground handlers, logistics firms, caterers. And aviation is also so important for our economy and trade. It's about keeping confidence as well. Employment in aviation has also been so hard hit in aviation communities. Feltham and Heston has been one of the worst hit constituencies, but that goes wider than just my constituency. And that's why I've been saying that, you know, it does need strong leadership from the government. You know, it's a view that's agreed with as well by the Transport Select Committee. Now, this is why I think we needed a specific sector deal. It's something that parliamentarians from all parties, including the Labour Party, have been calling for some time. You know, there is another window as we come out of lockdown. The Global Travel Task Force, I think, is supposed to meet on the 12th of April with recommendations around facilitating a return to safe international travel as soon as possible with those extra COVID measures. Following that, the government's got to determine when travel will continue to resume. But around that, we must see that support because jobs will come back in aviation. We've got to support families and businesses in the meantime.
Absolutely. So very important. And how have things affected your constituents? Because obviously they are around the Heathrow vicinity and many of them are employed by the airport.
That's absolutely right. My constituency starts just on the edge of the southern runway. And in fact, if you want to do some plane spotting, which is actually tremendous fun, then, you know, my constituency is a place that many people go. Look, the London Borough of Hounslow has been one of the hardest hit boroughs in terms of unemployment in London. It's the reason that the Hounslow Recovery Plan that was produced last autumn has been so important alongside some of the other work that the London Authority, West London Authorities, West London Alliance are doing with the Mayor of London. We had 56,000 local workers furloughed. Over 9,000 people had lost their jobs in the 6 months from March. And there's a possible £1 billion that's been lost from our local economy. And that is the sort of whole West London area too, from the downturn at Heathrow alone. If you're looking at a borough like Hounslow, that's going to see about 39,000 people on universal credit, up more than double from a year ago, it is absolutely staggering. And I look as well at the figures of younger people, older people in the area. In Feltham and Heston, there are 22,000 people on universal credit, a large number of young unemployed as well, over 2,000 across Hounslow. And for Feltham and Heston, the ninth highest claimant rate for universal credit in the country is so much in large part because of the impact of Heathrow. It's not just people losing their jobs, it's seeing a lot more part-time work and sort of the impact on household income that comes with that. And I've seen situations where in single households, whole intergenerational loss of employment has happened. Grandparents, parents and children losing their jobs at Heathrow, many on low pay as well. And what Citizens Advice have also talked about is the consequent impact on the level of household debt, and then people borrow to pay one bill and then they have to borrow to return that loan. So, you know, I'm really keen to see how we can work to see an employment plan that will match the scale of the crisis. And I do want to pay tribute to people I know across our communities who have worked so hard to support people in times of need. People who never thought they would be applying for social security, people who never thought that they would be going to food banks to just help get through and feed their families. And that community spirit is what's getting us through. But it has been really hard and it continues to be so.
Very, very difficult at the moment for everybody to have working what their plan forward is going to be. Talking about your constituency, its recovery post-COVID, is that dependent on the aviation industry, do you think?
In large part it is, but it also is going to need to see innovation for the future, because aviation's going to have to change as well. It's got to respond to climate challenge. It's got to show leadership in that. And it's one of the reasons why yesterday I also called for the UK to be leaders in accelerating zero carbon aviation, some work that the new London West Innovation District is also looking at. And that affects every part of the supply chain. It's about reducing the carbon footprint as well, looking at where new technologies might transform the way people think about transport and transportation for the future. There's got to be a skills plan that goes with that, something that, you know, the Innovation District has got to work with our FE colleges, our HE colleges, and our schools on. The thing is as well that we do need to rebalance the local economy. Now, I've mentioned about the Housing Recovery Plan and the West London Alliance report, which are local authorities working together. The reason being that that we've got to look at how we can be creating those jobs, more sustainable jobs and green growth of the future. There is some really interesting work starting to go on. You know, the idea of a solar farm that could be contributing to local energy demands for households and businesses, the thriving communities and green recovery funds that are coming with that, that the local authorities are looking at, but also looking at how we're going to create opportunities for businesses, because we've got to also look at how we're going to be changing our how our households are dependent on different sources of energy, how we can look to retrofit, but how we're going to plan ahead, you know, for infrastructure in new rail lines potentially, for looking at how we can be seeing new technology, new fibre, and better broadband links coming in, so that people can be studying, working at home, doing more than, you know, that we've been seeing over the last sort of year as well. So we've got to think afresh about where the jobs are also going to be in the future, how we're preparing people for those jobs. And it's really important that we think strategically, working with the Mayor of London as well, with government, and planning now.
Very much so. And important upgrades to improve accessibility and local connections and increase capacity at Feltham Station if we're going to complete it, with a government investment of £31 million. Some people may say, should they not be moving away from air travel and focusing on transport positives like that one?
This isn't an either or. In fact, one of the main reasons for investing in Feltham has also been its proximity to Heathrow, how many people travel to Heathrow. It's the main closest railway station. But Heathrow isn't just a local asset employing tens of thousands from the local area. It should be seen as a national asset and an international hub airport that is absolutely supporting economic activity across the UK, all of our regions and nations that it's connected with, but also trade internationally. And this investment that was from Network Rail and around £16 million that came also from the local council, it was a difficult project that caused quite a lot of inconvenience, and we had to intervene in support of residents and local businesses on a number of occasions. But it has uplifted the area. It's improved safety through the removal of the level crossing and capacity improvements on the roads and platform improvements as well for longer trains. You know, the important thing that it is coming on the back of is work that was started over 10 years ago, looking at where you can get the best cost-benefit ratios for local transportation improvements. The Eddington report and other projects afterwards were part of this. And so I do believe that this is an important part of how we deliver a future more prosperous Feltham with greater opportunities as well. But it isn't either or, because we do want to see that there is sustained investment in other areas of infrastructure. It's one of the reasons we need to look at a sort of Heathrow 360, not a Heathrow 180, with how Heathrow can connect with the south, southwest, west as well. One of the reasons as well why I've called for a Southern Rail Access link to Heathrow, which would link Feltham directly with Heathrow via a new station at Bedfont. So some of those bigger projects are really, really important. This was an important enabler to help create that new future.
So if we can move on to talking about the vaccine, a large proportion of your constituency are from a BAME background. How is the COVID-19 vaccine take-up going in your area?
The vaccine programme is now going well locally, and I want to thank everyone who's working so incredibly hard to ensure the vaccines are rolled out. I know it's taken a superhuman effort to get us this far. I know there are months of hard work ahead, and as London MPs, we've also been raising concerns about the sort of slower rollout in particularly in some parts of London than others. It is the reason why I've been working alongside our GPs, pharmacists and health services and community since December to raise issues like supply problems as well with ministers when they occur, because planning ahead is what is critical to help make sure that people have the confidence to take those book those appointments and to take them up. There were initially some areas that were a week or two behind in getting started, and we had to work together as well to find local venues that could work. That's something as well that we need to focus on as the vaccine rollout further expands, which it will need to as we have new groups coming on stream as well. I've heard generally that stories from people who are incredibly pleased that they've received their vaccine, how easy and how quick it was. Some who are also housebound, and we've had to make sure and help to make sure that's going well as well where people need it. But overall, whilst there's been a good take up of the vaccine, we really do need to encourage everyone, particularly from BAME communities, to have the vaccine when their time comes. It is statistically lower in our area as well as across the country. It is an area of concern, but I very much hope that we'll start to turn a corner on that too.
And for people who don't understand why there would be a hesitancy for that vaccine amongst the BAME community, can you explain why that might be?
I think there's also certainly been a misunderstanding about what COVID is. There are myths about alternative medicines that could be good for prevention or cure, but those myths need to be tackled head on. You know, I've raised this misunderstanding of what COVID is directly with members of the JCVI, because I think there needs to be improved messaging around this. It isn't a form of flu. It's much more devastating even than cancer if you get seriously affected. I've had families lose their loved ones within a week or 2 weeks of people being diagnosed with COVID, and that's in our local area. Children and grandchildren speaking at the funerals of their parents or grandparents far too early. And you know, what COVID does, the way it can be, you know, sort of seeing inflammation, organ damage, so many other ways in which we're seeing long COVID start to affect people's ability to work, that extended fatigue, so much that we still don't understand. I think people are seeking and trusting information as well from other sources on social media, much more than listening to mainstream media. So it's really important to keep getting the message out that vaccines have all been rigorously tested. They're declared safe by scientists and doctors around the world. They've been endorsed by all religious leaders. And we've got to kill those myths as well about what's in vaccines. The approved COVID-19 vaccines don't contain any animal products or eggs. They don't conflict with any religious dietary concerns. And people, I think, may not fully appreciate that in taking the vaccine, it's not just you that's protected. It's your family, it's your friends, and it's the community that you live in.
Yeah, I think it's so important to have that reassurance, particularly at the moment. And there is a big national campaign, I've seen it on the television as well, with lots of very high profile people from BAME backgrounds saying that please do get your vaccine. It's so very important. And as you said, long COVID also is having so many more effects than anybody could have possibly imagined when we first found out about this virus. To take a different turn now onto something a little bit more positive, you've got a fantastic initiative going on with laptops where people can donate them. Tell us more about it.
We started a programme a year ago almost. It's called Connecting Kids at Home, and it's run by the charity Hounslow's Promise, which is an education charity in Hounslow. We discovered that there was a major issue with children not having laptops and being able to connect to their online classroom when teachers told me that they were having to courier homework and schoolwork to children at the start of the first lockdown. So from that point, we started a community donation scheme where anyone in the community can donate a laptop or an iPad which is recycled effectively and reset, and then can be given by schools to children who need them. It's been a scheme that we've had hundreds of laptops donated through, but there's still an enormous need. Even with the belated donation scheme that came from the government with the first computers that actually only came out in sort of May or June of last year, by which time we were already donating to children in Hounslow. So I would really like to encourage anyone who's got a laptop or computer that they think they would be able to donate, very generously donate, please do visit the Hounslow's Promise website, www.hounslowspromise.org. There are donation points as well. You can also have the laptop donated, collected from you. And the donation points that we've got on certainly through March, on Thursdays and Fridays at the Bedfont Lane Community Centre on Bedfont Lane, between 10:30 and 1 every Thursday and Friday in March. But there are other drop-off points, and we can also, through volunteers, be collecting from your home. The more we can get, the more that can go out to children in need across Hounslow and other boroughs, and I think it will continue to make an enormous difference.
Such a fantastic initiative. The very best of luck with that. It sounds like such a brilliant idea, and so great that everybody's getting behind it so quickly as well. Thank you very much for updating us about your constituency and for your time, and stay really safe and well from everybody here at Really Jackie.
Thank you very much. It's been great to join you.